What's up, everybody? Danny Pinto here from the Celeste Sound Podcast. And before we get started on this episode, just a reminder, the Euros are coming up. Heck, we're about to preview them right now. And Europe's best soccer is back this summer. So you want to avoid a very, very messy bush, even though he plays for Copa America. But that's besides the point. In your midfield and clean it up with Manscaped, which is a proud sponsor of the Celeste Sound Podcast. Be a proper man this tournament and shave your balls with the brand new Lawnmower 4.0 and get the ultra smooth package as well. Join over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer just for you. Get 20% off and free shipping worldwide with the code CELESTSAON at manscaped.com. That's S-E-L-E-C-A-O at manscaped.com. Manscaped is dedicated to helping you level up your full body grooming game this summer so that you can enjoy these games clean and properly cared for. Manscaped is the only men's brand dedicated to below the waist grooming for their brand new shaving tools that have just dropped right before the Euros. The Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer is now available in both the US and in Canada. This 7,000 RPM trimmer features skin-safe technology to keep your balls in check and help reduce manscaping accidents. A new multifunction on-off switch can engage a travel lock created for travelers just like you and me. The Lawnmower 4.0 gives you the ability to turn on the 4000K LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. And what about additional guard lengths? Usually it's just been like just one guard length and then just, you know, going right against the skin there, which can be an issue. How about additional guard lengths this go around with sizes 1 through 4 to let you trim to your liking? I have been blown away by the performance and the craftsmanship and the details of this 4.0. It's been absolutely next level. If you want to get the complete package, the Manscaped Ultra Smooth Package is a 3-step kit to help keep your family jewels protected. Step 1, the Crop Exfoliator. Infused with ingredients that can soothe, clear, and keep the skin on and around your growing area feeling refreshed by reducing the risk of ingrown hairs by your delicates. Step 2, the Crop Gel. See where you're shaving with our unique clear shaving gel. And step 3, it's time to shave. The Crop Shaver was designed for shaving the growing area with confidence. 3 precision blades, including extra wide lubricating strips and a pivoting head for the ultimate grooming experience. All 3 of these vegan, cruelty-free, and sulfate-free products are included, so you know your manhood is in good hands wherever you watch the best in Europe face off. Look as sharp and shaved as Cristiano this summer on and off the field with Manscaped. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code CELESTSAON at manscaped.com. Make sure when you play with your balls, you use the right tools for the job. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code CELESTSAON at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code CELESTSAON, S-E-L-E-C-A-O. Hit the target and sure up your D this Euros with Manscaped.
This is Eric Krakow from BN Sports, and you are listening to the Celeste Sound Podcast.
Simoes, bending one for Torres. Eusebio. Oh, my word! Have you ever seen anything like that?
Bem jogado por Simão. A passar por dois adversários, Simão. A tentar oferecer o gol a Figo. E a bola é gol! O gol da Figo!
Ricosta vai! Ricosta já acreditou! Atira para o golo, atira, golo! Golo! Golo!
Cristiano Ronaldo, vai embora Cristiano Ronaldo! Mete, bateu, golo, 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 golo! Golo! Ronaldo! Obrigado, Cristiano!
Vai, Éder, vai, Éder, vai, Éder, vai, Éder, vai, chuta, chuta, chuta! Golo!
And we welcome you to episode number 45 of the Celeste Sound Podcast, a proud partner of Portugal.net and a member of the Blue Wire Hustle Podcast Network. My name is Danny Pinto. I am your host. We want to thank you once again for taking the time to make this show a part of your podcast listening day. And ladies and gentlemen, it's here. It's finally here. Euro 2020 is officially upon us as we are releasing this episode the same day as Euro 2020 officially begins. I am absolutely pumped. I'm excited. I'm hopeful. I'm many other adjectives, but mostly I am thankful that we are finally able to get this European Championship up and running a year after it was supposed to take place. But good things, folks, come to those who wait, and I cannot wait to watch our Slesson over the next 4 weeks in their defense of our European title. Match day number one isn't until Tuesday for the Slesson. They will take on Hungary in Budapest on June the 15th. Pretty much an away game in a tournament, so that's always fun. And then 4 days later, another away game in Germany when they take on the Germans in Munich Saturday, June the 19th. And then back to Budapest on Wednesday, June the 23rd, as we get the rematch of the 2016 final, as Portugal will take on France in the final group match of Group F in Euro 2020 action. We will get you ready for Euro 2020 on this episode and what we hope are many more episodes that run through, I would say, about the middle of July, as we will have Eric Krakauer of BN Sports along with us throughout the tournament. We announced this on a few previous episodes and on our social media, as well as Eric has graciously agreed to be a part of our podcast as our Portugal match analyst throughout Euro 2020. So we want to thank you. Eric, a big obrigado to him for his time. And we look forward to what we hope is a long, long run for the Slesson over the next 4 weeks. We will get to our preview of Euro 2020 and our match against Hungary in just a few moments. But as always, please check out all the ways you can follow, share, listen, and subscribe to the podcast. First, bookmark our website, SlessonPod.com. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Just enter the Slesson Podcast in the search engine and hit that subscribe button. You can follow us on Twitter at SlessonPod. Hit us up on Instagram at SlessonPod. You can like and share our Facebook page, facebook.com/SlessonPod. And you can reach us via email, SlessonPod@gmail.com. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or any other podcasting platforms. Simply enter the Slesson Podcast in your search engine. And don't be shy, if you have it in you, to leave the pod a 5-star rating and a nice comment on Apple Podcasts. That is always, always appreciated. And don't forget about our partners over at the Joseph Ray Barbecue Company, serving delicious barbecue all over Northern California and the Bay Area. The Joseph Ray Barbecue Company is the right choice for your Slesson watching parties all tournament long. Send JRBC a message on their Instagram at Joseph_Ray_BBQ_CO for a quote. That's at Joseph_Ray, spelled R-A-E, _BBQ_CO for a quote. Like this podcast, we are Portuguese-American owned and operated, and they are ready to make your next gathering a delicious one. Hit up the pure, delicious fire that is the Joseph Ray Barbecue Company on Instagram and tell them that you heard about them on the Slesson Podcast. All right, folks, so we have reached episode 45. That number really doesn't mean much to any of you, but number 45 means that we are now officially on the road. We actually have gotten to the end of the road. We have hit Euro 2020 a year after it was supposed to happen, obviously because of the pandemic, but we are finally able to watch the Slesson attempt to defend their European title. And to do it today and throughout the tournament is our Portugal match analyst and BN Sports' own Eric Krakauer. Eric can be followed on Twitter at Eric Krakauer. That's E-R-I-C-K-R-A-K-A-U-E-R. Eric, meu amigo. First of all, a Feliz Dia de Portugal, as we are recording this on June the 10th to be published on June the 11th. That's a lot of inside podcasting, but happy Portugal Day, my friend.
Thanks. I didn't even realize it was June 10th until you told me. So I'm a terrible Portuguese for not knowing that. Although, I have to be honest, I've never once celebrated Portugal Day.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to take that out of the podcast, although every part of me says I should. But we're going to keep it in for posterity.
I'll tell you this. You know, as I think you already know, I was born and grew up in Portugal, only moved away when I was 18. And I don't recall a single occasion where Portugal Day was a big deal. It was only when I moved to the United States and I learned that in Newark there was this big procession. And in the 17 years I lived in New York City, not once did I make it into that craziness. I think I was a little bit intimidated.
Nice. Well, you know, hey, it's you were born there. That's good enough for me. I got my citizenship taken care of in February, so I'm now a Portuguese brother more so than we were before at the beginning of this podcast. So just great to have you on, man, and looking forward to hopefully what is a long run of matches for our beloved Seleção this summer.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm looking forward to it. You know, we've been waiting for a year. It's great to know that we're going to have some fans in the stands, although that might work against us in the first game. We'll get into that in a little bit. But I think that extra time may actually be beneficial for the Portuguese national team. We shall see.
Well, let's get right to it, Eric. Let's get the kind of the preview of the team first, as we'll talk about the first match against Hungary here in just a few moments. But the 26-man roster was called up a few weeks ago by Fernando Santos in the defense of the European title. What are your initial thoughts, or what were your initial thoughts of the roster that was called up by you, Mister?
Well, I don't think there was anything particularly surprising. I wasn't too happy with Nelson Semedo being in the squad, although I understand why he's there. I think Ricardo Pereira is a significantly better right back. In fact, he may be the most complete Portuguese right back in the game. He had been absent for a long time due to injury, and he hasn't found his best football. But even not playing his best football, I still think he's superior to Nelson Semedo. Other than that, I don't think there can be any complaints. I like the fact he didn't need to bring more than three center backs because Danilo has played in that position quite well for PSG. I called a few of their games this season when he did slot in as a center back. We have seen him slot into that position both against Spain and more recently against Israel. So no need to waste a spot with an extra center back, especially considering that that is one of the positions that we are lacking in, if you will. So pretty good team. I think there's versatility, positional, profile-wise as well, and just about as good as a team as you're going to get in this competition.
You know, we know the names that are on this roster now that weren't on the roster 5 years ago that was part of the, you know, the championship-winning team. So you have players, I should say, like a Bruno Fernandes, like a Diogo Jota, Ruben Dias, João Cancelo. Bernard Silva would have been on the 2016 team had he not gotten injured right before. There is a belief that on paper, and I'm one of these folks that believe it, and the majority of the fans do, that this team on paper is much more talented on paper, again, than the team in 2016. With that, how much pressure do you think does that put on a gentleman like Fernando Santos, given that the team won with less talent, for the lack of a better term, 5 years ago, and the emergence of this new generation of talent plying their trade, majority of them in the Premier League, a roster that should be better this go around? How much pressure do you think is on Fernando Santos to get the most out of this team this go around?
You know, that's a question that I've thought about for a while now, and I think you can look at it from two perspectives. There is the perspective of the supporter in Portugal who probably never believed he or she would see Portugal lift a major trophy like Portugal did in 2016. And I think that what that does is it takes that burden of expectation away from the team. We've won the trophy, asking for a second one in the same competition may be a little bit too much to ask. So I think in that way, the pressure is lessened. Now, I could be wrong. That's just my opinion. Insofar as the talent is concerned, I have no doubt that there is a large faction of supporters, and you can add journalists to that, that look at the attacking talent on display here for the Portuguese national team. And they look at Fernando Santos, the man who delivered two trophies for the country, a man who, as a result of that, should be worshipped in footballing circles. But I think that there is also an understanding that Fernando Santos is perhaps not the most adequate, if you will, coach to take advantage of the attacking talent that he has at his disposal. And that's not necessarily a pejorative statement. We know who he is. This is a guy who prioritizes defense-first football. It's what got us the title in 2016. It's what we're going to see in this Euro, and we needn't look much further than the friendly at the Metropolitano against Spain, where I tweeted facetiously that, you know, there was no better venue for Portugal to impose Simeone-style tactics against the Spanish national team. So I think that's what we're going to see against France and Germany, and I hope that we will observe a more audacious, a more atrevido Portuguese national team against Hungary in the first game.
We're talking with Eric Krakauer of BN Sports. He's going to be joining us throughout Euro 2020 as our Portugal match analyst. And we're just previewing right now the roster and kind of how we got here to Euro 2020. And then we'll be previewing the Seleção's first match against Hungary in just a few moments. Eric, is there any part of the roster that, and this is a very Portuguese question to ask, because, you know, we can never have just something positive and something good. We always have to try to find the negative of something. But is there a part of this roster or maybe a combination that you would maybe not like to see, for lack of a better term? But anything that kind of gives you pause, anything that kind of gives you a concern on the roster right now?
Yeah, I think, look, there's the center back position, which we've spoken about in the past on this show. A lot of people have brought up, so it certainly isn't a secret. Bep is a terrific center back. He had an excellent season. His performance against Chelsea in the Champions League, you know, brought his name to the headlines. But he is 38 years old, and he's just played a very long campaign that has been condensed into a short amount of time. So you have to wonder whether physically he is going to be apt for this tournament insofar as the long haul is concerned. And if he's not there, yes, you have José Font, who had a phenomenal season with Lille, winning the title for the first time in a decade.
Yeah, captaining that side as well.
Captaining that side. But, you know, he's 37 years old. And again, so the same problem presents itself. And then the replacement is Danilo, who I already mentioned had a good season playing as a center back for both Tuchel and Pochettino at PSG. So two coaches who saw in him the qualities, the attributes that are necessary to a good center back, but he is not a center back. So I think that's a position to be concerned about. And the other one is the left back position. And I say this speaking specifically about Rafael Guerreiro, who is a terrific player. I think he's only improved at Dortmund. And we saw him play some of his best football under the management of Lucien Favre, who has since been sacked. He played with a three center back defense, and that placed Rafael Guerreiro in a more advanced role where you saw all his attacking adroitness. But defensively, I think he still is a bit of a liability, positionally, physically. So if he starts, and I believe he will be the starter in the first game against Hungary, and I'd like him to be a starter in that game because Portugal will have the lion's share of possession, somebody has to help protect him. And in 2016, that was actually the weakness. You know, mm-hmm. when teams attacked Hungary, for example, in that famous or infamous 3-3 game, I know that he wasn't playing in that game. It was your Benfica boy or former Benfica player. I can't think of his name right now, but I believe your son has his.
So I was trying to not have you say his name. Yeah, it was Eliseu. It's fine.
Eliseu.
Yeah.
But I'm not pointing the finger at him, sure, necessarily, but the fact that there was very little help for the fullbacks given the formation and the system that Portugal was using, and sometimes they were exposed. I'm afraid that that could happen again. But just to make one last point on that, Nuno Mendes, I think, is an excellent defender. He doesn't give you the same attacking prowess of Rafael Guerreiro, but somebody I think who could make a case, you could make a case for starting against France and Germany, or Germany and France in that order.
A couple of things on the two positions that you have mentioned here, which is the center back and the left back positions. It's a friendly, and it's not something that anyone has really talked about, but the game against Israel, I found Pep, and maybe it was just him just coming off of a long season, but I found him maybe taking either a couple of chances that he normally wouldn't take, or he actually got turned around a couple of times on both sides of the half. For me, and I think for maybe a lot of fans, you know, he's been such a soldier, for lack of a better term, for this Lesson, and he gives it his all, and it's he turns it up another level when he puts on the Lesson jersey, amongst some other players that are actually on this roster too. But we're almost like looking for or expecting and waiting for the wheels to finally fall off, and we hope obviously it's not going to happen in this tournament. But there were a couple of times where I was just like, oh man, maybe he doesn't make that move or isn't turned around as quickly as he was, 2-3 years ago. And then in terms of Rafael Guerreiro, Eric, could he just not be a good fit for this roster as it's played, given the success he plays at with Dortmund in a more of attacking style? I mean, you could play him in a wing back position if you have the double pivot with the central defenders there to kind of help out too. But is he just in a bad? Is this roster and this formation and this way of playing for him a bad fit overall for Rafael Guerreiro?
No, I think that's a little bit too harsh. Look, we understand that players have different abilities, different attributes, and if it is the responsibility of a manager, in this case Fernando Santos, to figure out how to mitigate players' weaknesses, right? I mean, we could focus on Rafael Guerreiro. We can now focus on a 36-year-old Cristiano Ronaldo who, you know, has increasingly shown weaknesses in his game. So his lack of explosiveness doesn't justify, in my mind now, some of the concessions that Fernando Santos has to make in order to have him in the 11. Maybe that's too strong too. Doesn't justify that. I guess that's harsh as well. But now, and that's a whole different conversation, you can have a legitimate discussion as to whether Portugal is better as a collective without him in the 11. And that's because what he used to bring 2-3 years ago in terms of explosiveness, well, that doesn't exist really anymore. And if you don't have that, you can begin finding reasons why not to include him in the 11.
So he doesn't celebrate Portugal Day, and he's taking shots at Ronaldo. I don't even know if Eric Krakauer is Portuguese. Guys, I got to be honest with you. we're talking with Eric Krakauer here of BN Sports. We're previewing Euro 2020 and our beloved Sélection. Let me go to Ronaldo here, because it's on the next page of my notes here. But, he's 36 years old. He's obviously not coming off of a great season at Juve. There is talk, as you mentioned, the acquiescing to him may be something that should be looked at a little bit closer, especially on the Sélection side, given the amount of talent now in the attack, and how, as a collective, as you put it, how much, I don't want to say better, but I mean, sometimes better. It's okay to say it, I think, that they play. Like, there's in the Nations League, the game against Croatia comes to mind. Hell, 5 years ago in the final against France in Euro 2016, everyone in the world, probably except for those in that locker room, thought when he went down to 25 minutes into the match that Portugal had absolutely zero chance of winning. And yet, as a team, as a collective, and I like that term, as a collective, Portugal found a way to beat the French. What is your opinion of him currently in terms of just as a player? And then what do you think the soccer world's opinion of him is right now?
Well, my opinion is that he's still a wonderful player, still one of the best forwards in the game, but one now that doesn't consistently offer you so many of those things that propelled him to the very best in the game, along with Lionel Messi. He's still a guy who is going to be a consistent goal scorer, and I think he'll be that for the next 2 or 3 years. He's in incredible physical shape, and I have no doubt that he will have an impact in this Euro. You know, when I said that you could make a case as to why he doesn't or why he shouldn't be in the 11, I think that has to do with just how much talent there is in this Portuguese national team. This is not a team solely reliant on this player. And having said that, I think it's important for me to say, too, that I have hated the conversation about Cristiano Ronaldo not having a supporting cast with the Portuguese national team. Sure, not as good as the other teams that are the perennial contenders in tournaments like the Euro or the World Cup, but still very good talent around him. I mean, in 2016, you still had João Moutinho, and you still had Pepe, you still had Nani on that team. So you still had, you know, and there are others. Renato Sanches, who had a breakout tournament and got the Young Player of the Tournament award. So you still had plenty of talent, but the kind of talent that we're seeing now is, I think, on par with what we saw in the Golden Generation. You know, in 2000, when I think Portugal had probably their best team, or 2002 World Cup. Now, going to your second question, I think a lot of people have changed their perception about Cristiano Ronaldo. They don't think that he's a world beater anymore. You know, you look at the season that Juve has had, and that's part of the equation, right? Some people consider his move a complete failure to that team. I think that is stupid. In many ways, he carried that team. It's not his 100%. Fault. They paid a ridiculous amount of money for him and then didn't give him, and I'm going to use the term, the supporting cast that he needed to be at his best. And he still managed to score plenty of goals and managed to break all sorts of records. But that's not something new when it comes to Cristiano Ronaldo. He's often, even though there are plenty who consider him to be you know, one of the best two players in the world, I think people still found reasons to knock him. Reasons that, in my opinion, were ridiculous. So I know that was a long-winded double answer for you, but let me underscore it with this. He has a role to play in this Euro, and he is still an excellent player.
You know, there's something to be said, and I mean, again, the one part of his game that I have some issue, or I take some issue with, is like the taking on one-on-one now is something that I've noticed that is lacking. And of course, he's 36 years old. He's not as explosive as he once was. Yet it's something that he consistently tries to do. I mean, who am I to say for him not to do it? He's done it for his entire career. But that's one of the main things for me that I've seen from him that has definitely, you know, gone a few notches down in terms of his game. But I agree with you, Eric, in terms of him having an impact in this tournament. And it could be with him scoring 4 or 5 goals, and it could be him. What the perfect example for me is the first goal of the, and again, it's a friendly, but just in terms of how the field and the defenders were set up, the first goal against Israel that Bruno Fernandes had scored, he was able to waltz into that 18 because there were two defenders on just the outside of the 6-yard box that were flanking Ronaldo. And when you have a guy like Ronaldo who can still, you know, give that kind of response in terms of a defensive responsibility, and then you have a guy the caliber of a Bruno Fernandes able to just waltz in, that's your impact. And that's something that obviously will not show up in a score sheet, but that's something that he being Ronaldo, can still have the influence on a match where you still have to be able to track where he is. He is not somebody that's going to now just waltz around and not be marked. And if you could still have that threat and have that guy be a weapon, for lack of a better term, and open up for a much better roster now this go around, and have players like Bernard Silva and a Diogo Jota and a Bruno Fernandes attack either, you know, in the six or coming into the 18, it opens up this offense that, quite honestly, has been a little bit in a rut because we haven't been able to find the right offensive combination for this team in the last few years.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. All I'll add to that is that, you know, he was where he was supposed to be in the position that he was playing against Israel. He was the point man. He was a target man. And he went into the six-yard box, attracted the attention of two defenders, and that's why the trailing run of Bruno Fernandes was so effective. But also, you got to give credit to Cancelo, who didn't defer to Cristiano Ronaldo, which is something that we've often seen, right? Sure. Even though he's marked by two guys, he's flanked, as you used the word, I thought, excellently. No space to try and thread the needle. Here's Bruno Fernandes making a run, and he's one of the best shooters in the game. And what was interesting in that game against Israel is that very often Cristiano Ronaldo was taking up spaces that were really designated for Diogo Jota. And I know Diogo Jota didn't have a very good game, and most of that is on him. However, you can see sometimes how Diogo Jota's movement is restrained by Cristiano Ronaldo's positioning.
We're talking with Eric Krakauer here at BN Sports. We are talking about our beloved Celeste song as we are, as of this recording, one day away, but by the time you guys listen to it, we are officially the beginning of Euro 2020, and we are all thankful for that. That is for sure. Portugal will take on Hungary on June the 15th, followed by June the 19th against Germany, that match in Munich, and then on June the 23rd, back to Budapest in Hungary to take on the defending world champions, the French. A French team, if you guys don't recall, a French team that the Celeston beat 5 years ago to win the European Championship. We've mentioned a few names, Eric, outside of Cristiano Ronaldo. Obviously, he gets the glitz, the glamour, the attention. Outside of him, who are you most looking forward to seeing on this international stage for the Celeston?
That's a difficult question to answer.
He's going to say Bruno Fernandes, guys, because he's a sporting guy, but I'll save him the trouble there. But
I'm not.
I'm kidding.
He would be one of them, but I'm going to say Diogo Jota, because I think that he will be Portugal's X factor. He is a guy who offers numerous threats for Portugal. His ability in the air, he did miss a sitter against Israel, point-blank range. However, he had to get into that position. And that in itself is half of the battle. He has a physical presence to him, a tenacity to his game that I think in many ways has been absent from attacking players in the Portuguese national team. I can't recall a player with his attributes off the top of my head. I mean, maybe you can, but I can't think of anybody.
Not at his size.
Not at his size. Not as his, you know, he's just such a difficult player to contain. And for his size, very good in the air. So I think that this is a guy who is going to create imbalances. He's good in transition. He's good in possession. He is zippy. He can play in tight spaces. He's got that Luis Suarez ability where the ball seems to ricochet off his shin pads and land in a perfect position for him to finish off a play. So I think he could be an X factor. And after him, Bruno Fernandes, only because he has never really been able to translate club form into the national team. And maybe we saw a sign that that is possible against Israel.
You know, speaking of both of those players, Diogo Jota and Bruno Fernandes, you know, the, you know, we've seen Diogo Jota emerge as a consistent goal scorer when he's playing for the Seleção, and he'll get them in you know, he'll get two at a time in some games. I kind of, you know, if we want to go to into a bit of a wagering type deal, he's at 50-1 to be the top goal scorer of Euro 2020. I mean, you throw like just a $10 spot, you get $500, and you know you're singing all the way to the bank. Bruno Fernandes is at 40-1. André Silva is at 40-1. Ronaldo is at 12-1. But he's a sneaky bet to get the golden boot if obviously Portugal make a deep run. And player of the tournament is the other player you mentioned to me. If this Seleção team makes a deep run, and I mean to win the player of the tournament, the team's obviously going to have to make the final more than likely. But I think Bruno Fernandes, if he can somehow translate the Manchester United form to the Seleção, and this team goes on a deep run, maybe a finals run, I think he has every opportunity to take home the player of the tournament award, just because he can score the goal, he can score the ball, he can assist. He is a factor on the offense 100%. And I think those two guys as additions to this European squad that weren't there 5 years ago can help alleviate the pressure that Ronaldo seems to put on not only himself and also Fernan Sanchez kind of puts on him by the way that the team plays with him. But I think these two guys are definite guys to keep an eye on for the Seleção fans and for football fans watching the tournament this summer.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm not a betting man, but I'm considering putting a wager on Jota now.
and by the way, Portugal at 8-1 to win the tournament. I put a bet on them in 2019 in Vegas. I got them at 12-1, and they're still keeping that. They're gonna keep that. They're gonna. What's the word I'm looking for? They're going to honor it. There it is. Since the tournament was moved. But that's another thing. Listen, I'm just going to count my money, hopefully, on July the 12th. And I'll share. If anyone needs a couple of bucks after all my winnings, just let me know. So there's so much talk, Eric, as we kind of transfer now to the group. There's so much talk about the group of death with us, with Germany, and with France. Hungary does not get talked about yet. An opening match against Hungary in Budapest, given the team that given the matchup that they had 5 years ago, they don't have Dominic Szoboszlai. I think that's how you pronounce his name. But this team is not. I mean, they're 37th ranked in the world. It's not a pushover, but to be able to open up against a favorite at home at the Puskás Arena in Budapest, I mean, this is not going to be an easy task, nor should anyone expect it to be for Portugal heading into Hungary in Hungary.
No, I've already reminded everyone of that 3-3 game, which I thought we were going to lose, and luck would have it, we didn't, and we ended up winning the tournament. I think that this is going to be a very tough game for Portugal, and this has to be a win for Portugal. There's just no other way to even consider another result. If they win this game, knowing that France and Germany will take at least a point, at least 2 points off of each other, I think that it puts Portugal in a great position in that second game against Germany. Let's say that it's 1-1 between France. They draw. France and Germany draw. Germany, I think, will go into that second game feeling that they absolutely have to get a result against Portugal because France is going to play Hungary and they fully expect France to beat Hungary. And if France gets that result and they face Portugal in that final game, well, the pressure is off, essentially. So Portugal must beat Hungary. If they do not, I think that they are in trouble. And Hungary playing in a tournament for the first time in a very long time. On home soil, 67,000 strong. Yes, they will be without Szoboszlai, who is fantastic. I mean, I called the Austrian Cup final about a year and a half ago, and he was just simply out of this world. I knew a little bit about him. I'd seen some video, but I'd never called the game with him in it. And watching him play 90 minutes, a guy who is super versatile, who can score, can assist, you know, the fact that he's not there is a huge boon to the Portuguese national team. The tricky thing about Hungary is that this is a very good defensive team. And if you look at the stars that remain, stars in, you know, inverted commas, quotation marks, if you will, they're all defensive. You know, you have Willy Orban, who is terrific for RB Leipzig. You have Attila Shalai, whose games I called for Fenerbahce this season. He came in and he really helped out that defensive line. So those two guys are very good. And then you have Peter Gulácsi, you know, the goalkeeper, a veteran, who has been excellent at RB Leipzig. So this is a team that is going to be very difficult to break down, a team that plays with a 3-5-2. In terms of attacking threat, I don't think they pose much, although watch out for Willy Orban because he is good. He's an aerial threat in attacking set pieces. And up top, the guy that I would focus on as a proven goal scorer is Nemanja Nikolić, who played for some time in Major League Soccer with the Chicago Fire, a guy who is now in the twilight of his career, but he's a fox in the box. You know, this is a veteran poacher, a guy who can put a ball away, and if you give him a couple half chances, he'll capitalize. So this is the proverbial banana peel and a must win. I can't emphasize that enough.
Yeah, I mean, just given what is ahead of the Slesson after this match, and not knowing, because I believe they will play, they play before France and Germany. So, you know, both of those giants will know exactly what Portugal has done, and Hungary for that matter. And they'll have an idea of how they want to play to position themselves into a match day two. But yeah, I couldn't agree. I couldn't agree with you more, Eric. In terms of must wins, we talk of must wins and we know what happened 5 years ago, but we can't always rely on what happened 5 years ago, given this group as well, because you know there's no Iceland, and there's no, I forget who the other team was at this point, but this is a much tougher task, and yeah, the team is better talent wise, but it's a much tougher task to get out, and I think the pressure that it would put on France and Germany to see Portugal have 3 points, especially Germany, given that it's match day two, and who knows with them, given with Lowe leaving, they're not coming in as hot or as feared, for a lack of a better term, as the traditional German team would. I don't think you should take them lightly by any means, but there's a lot going on with that team. And if you could put 3 points in front of them, Portugal having 3 points heading into that Germany match in day two, that could put a lot of pressure on them against France. And then obviously, depending on what happens in match day two, but it's essential. I agree with you that we come away with 3 points. Absolutely.
And don't forget that two guys that starred in that game, scoring incredible goals, Cristiano Ronaldo and Nani. Cristiano Ronaldo with that first assist, a wonderful pass to Nani, and then the back heel.
Oh, unreal.
You know, it was one of those performances. You know, the one thing, you know, I hate to do this, but I'm going to do it.
Do it.
All right? Anytime you mention one, you tend to mention the other, Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi. And
you know that Messi is playing in Copa America, right?
Copa America. And he's got his target set on winning a continental competition.
So I'm sure he does.
With Cristiano Ronaldo. But how often have we seen Cristiano Ronaldo come up big in these absolutely must-win scenarios for the Portuguese national team? I mean, Hungary is just an example. Sweden, the game against Sweden in Sweden, is the one that everybody thinks about. For me, the masterful performance where he could have had 3, 4, 5 goals in a similar scenario to this, a group of death in 2012 against the Dutch national team.
100%.
I know they made it very difficult on themselves against Denmark, and they needed a late goal. Was it Varela who scored the winner in that game?
I believe so.
I forget. Varela coming up with big games, you know, big goals, also scoring against the United States in the World Cup 2 years later to keep them alive in the group stage. So Cristiano Ronaldo has an incredible knack of coming up in big when he is needed. But then again, he's a different player now.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I dropped this on you, and I put it on Twitter a couple hours before the recording of this podcast. And it's, you know, I've been crunching some numbers because we scored two goals in the first half. I know it's against Israel, but I started thinking, you know, we haven't seen the quartet, and I like using that term, the quartet of Ronaldo, Bruno Fernandes, Bernard Silva, and Diogo Jota on the field much together. Obviously, we, you know, with the wonder kid that is João Félix, we've tried to incorporate him into the attack. That has yet to come to fruition in terms of any consistency. You know, I'm glad to see that Andrés Silva is back in the good graces of the national team. He had just a tremendous season at Frankfurt, being the second leading scorer in the Bundesliga, and I believe setting the record for single season at the club in goals scored. But I think and I feel that the combination of Ronaldo, Jota, Bernard Silva, and Bruno Fernandes is the best attack that this team can go with going forward, especially if they want to also kind of, put in a almost like a wing back system per se. Having a guy like João Cancelo cross the ball, you have two guys in Jota and in Ronaldo who can go after it on the other side. Say what you will about Rafael Guerreiro, but he does send a beautiful ball into the box more times than not. Even Nuno Mendes, if you want to start him, he's also good at crossing it in. So there's a lot of attack there, and I ran some numbers, and these are unofficial, so if I'm wrong, you know, shoot me. But since Diogo Jota's first game with the Seleção, which was in November, I believe November 14 of 2019, it was in the European qualifiers, they have only played, those four have only played together 150 minutes, stretched over five games. I'm sorry, stretched over three games. So 150 minutes and three games. In those three games, with all four of them on the field, they have combined for five goals and two assists. Now, does that mean that it's going to, you know, be the same way if they start them in Hungary or against Hungary and against France and against Germany? No, but the small sample size that it is, you've seen the emergence of Diogo Jota. You can kind of see Bruno Fernandes get more and more comfortable. I thought Bernard Silva had a good match leading into the Euros against Israel, and we know what you get with Ronaldo. And I think that combination of those four players can really give anybody in this tournament some problems.
Yes, and it's a combination that I would have in my starting 11 against Hungary in the first game. I think that you have to go with a very attacking lineup. One that can play in tight spaces, one that every so often may be reliant on balls from out wide to try and capitalize on Cristiano Ronaldo's aerial ability. And you mentioned something about Rafael Guerreiro and his delivery from out wide. Something that was striking against Israel, and I tweeted about this, was how shocking the short corners were from Portugal throughout that game. You know, one of the corner kick routines that we have seen over and over since Rafael Guerreiro has been a mainstay with this national team is that short corner that gets kicked from the left side, gets kicked to him, and then he sends it in. And that the goal against Wales, the second goal, the one that killed Wales in 2016, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, was born from a corner kick like that, with Cristiano Ronaldo heading it in. So without Guerreiro in the team, that corner was basically non-existent. They tried different iterations, just did not work. On the right side, they do it with Bruno Fernandes, wasn't successful either. So that is, without a doubt, something that Rafael Guerreiro brings to this team. But hearkening back to your overall point about that foursome, I think they need to be on the turf at Pushkas Stadium once that whistle blows on Tuesday.
Well, let's get to Tuesday, and we are recording this on a Thursday, the day before the Euros start. So there's plenty of runway here on this episode to kind of see exactly what Fnun Sunch ends up doing. Hopefully, between now and then, there's no injuries, there's no COVID, there's no nothing. But let's talk about the starting 11 that that we think will go. And then I want to ask you about a philosophy question in terms of starting 11s after we kind of go through the positions here. But let's go one on one with these positions. We'll start with goalkeeper. I don't think there's any question. We both think Rui Patrice is going to start.
What, after Rui Silva's incredible performance against Israel?
I'm telling you, it's a clean sheet. A guy named Rui between the pipes. I mean, it's worked before.
It has indeed. Look, you know, I don't mean to mock him. I love Rui Silva. He has been spectacular over the last two seasons for Granada. Three seasons. He was the goalkeeper of the year when they were promoted two seasons ago. So yes, of course, Rui Patricio starts in goal.
What does your back four look like?
My back four is pretty obvious. João Cancelo on the right, Pep and Ruben Dias in the middle, and then Rafael Guerreiro on the left.
How much do you think a full house a full house away match in his first tournament is a factor of not starting Nuno Mendes in the first match?
I don't think that's much of a factor.
Okay.
I just don't believe, and watch me be proven wrong, that Fernando Santos needs his defense. And I certainly don't want to limit Nuno Mendes or portray him as a defensive player, because he isn't. But he's far more direct. He's much more of a vertical player than Rafael Guerreiro is. And with a team that's going to sit back, you need somebody who can navigate tight pockets of space, and that's what Rafael Guerreiro does so brilliantly.
Well, let's get to the four that we mentioned already, which is Ronaldo, Bernard Silva, Bruno Fernandes, and Diogo Jota. I am like you. I think those four need to start the match, and be the focal point of the offense going forward here in this tournament. That leaves that double pivot, for a lack of a better term, in the middle of the midfield, to be redundant there. But I have one guy penned in, and then his partner. I am just having some issues with deciding who I'm going to put next to William Carvalho. I think William Carvalho is one of those players that it doesn't matter what kind of form he's in the on a club scene. He puts on the Seleção jersey, and he's instant impact, and not that, you know, he's gonna score a lot of goals or gonna set the world on fire, but there's a calming presence in that midfield when he's in there. Who I would put next to him, I would put Danilo Pereira, but if you're also, you know, hoping that he is your quote unquote unofficial fourth center back, do you put him there? Do you put a guy like Ruben Neves, who played and started against Israel, next to William Carvalho? I'm kind of torn as to who I would pair with William Carvalho in the middle. Who do you think, or what is your middle there looking like, Eric?
Well, will you grant me permission to fantasize a little bit about this?
Eric, you can do whatever the hell you want, buddy.
All right.
You got carte blanche on this show.
Thank you. First of all, let's do away with the double pivot, because it is unnecessary in this game. I was surprised that we saw the double pivot against Israel, although understandable considering that he will probably go with a double pivot against Germany and France. And one of the things that is so important in a short tournament like this is routine or regimentation, right?
Sure.
But for a second, let us just believe that Fernando Santos is going to be adventurous in his approach. William Carvalho, I think you're absolutely right. The fact that there were people complaining that he's in this lineup, in this squad, is just silly, for lack of a better word. This is a guy who has been a staple in this midfield when he came in 2014, because he didn't start against Germany, right? This was a late inclusion in the lineup. He just bosses the game in midfield. He's a slick passer. He's a tank physically. You know, very hard to shoulder him off the ball. So you play him in an inverted triangle, so him at the base of the midfield, and then I put Bernardo Silva and Bruno Fernandes alongside him at the tip of those, at the double tip of that triangle. I think that you need creativity in this game. You need industriousness, and those guys will offer it.
So if I have a double pivot, and so I've got two defensive midfielders. I have my back four, and then I have my my quartet, as I call them, of Ronaldo, Diogo Jota, Bruno, and Bernardo. My 11 is set. I don't have that second defensive midfield. You know what? Let's have some fun. Let's get a little offensively adventurous. Let's go with Renato Sanches playing in the midfield with William Carvalho. That's just for the hell of I don't know. But Eric, you're missing a player here, so I'll defer to you. Your lineup, obviously, you want to go away from the double pivot here, but what does your midfield and then your attack look like?
Well, I gave you my three in the midfield, and it's more of, you know, I said kind of inverted triangle in the 4-3-3.
Oh, yeah, you did. I'm sorry. Yeah, you did.
It's kind of more of a diamond formation, because then, now this one is going to surprise you. Despite his struggles, I'd put João Félix ahead of those guys, and then up top, Cristiano Ronaldo and Diogo Jota.
Wow. I kind of like it. It's, you know, it is adventurous. It's not a nonsense typical lineup, but you know, there's a reason why these guys are getting called up, and there's a reason why you have players of that caliber that can do the things that give options like this an opportunity to breathe. We shall see what happens.
Well, can I give you just a precedent?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because
go ahead.
I know that there are people listening to this going, man, never invite this guy back. First, his last name is Krakauer. How is he even Portuguese? He shouldn't be talking about it. He doesn't celebrate Portuguese National Day. Are you kidding me?
He hates Ronaldo. It's all this.
He hates Ronaldo. He's questioning Ronaldo. How dare he?
He's rooting for the Germans on match day, too. You know he is.
Well, my father was German born, so
attaboy.
there is a little bit of hence the Krakauer, by the way.
Understood.
You know, there's precedent for this, and that is that Fernando Santos went with that diamond formation in 2016. You know, João Mário was playing on the left of it. You had William Carvalho at the back. You had Adrian Silva, who is a player who not enough people talk about in terms of his performances. And then sometimes you had Renato Sanches, and I forget who else he had up there. It's not coming to my mind. So I think Fernando Sanches understands how to coach that diamond formation.
He had Andre Gomes in there in the middle there too.
He did. Yeah. It's not an easy formation to play by any means, and it requires very attacking fullbacks to stretch the field. Oh, look at that. We have those guys.
It should be fun, Eric. I mean, it's, you know, when the Slesson play, obviously the anticipation is just so high, and we've been waiting an extra year for the opportunity to defend this European title. That, you know, going back 5 years ago when they beat France, it was a euphoria that outside of my kids being born and getting married. I would say I've never in my life felt, and probably it's my greatest sports moment of all time. It doesn't even compare to anything else. But with that, as we kind of talked about in the beginning, comes with the expectations of, well, you know, this team is so much better, we should be able to do it again. It just doesn't happen that easily. But I'm just excited for this tournament, and I'm just excited to to see some matches that matter on a big stage with this group of players who the majority of these guys are either reaching or at their prime right now.
Yeah, look, you look at this squad and you can let yourself dream. I'm going to be very realistic and grounded about this. You know, I thought in 2002 we were going to make a lot of noise. You know, I was in college in 2002 and my coach was Billy Walsh, who used to play for the Metro Stars at the time, and he played for the Chicago Fire as well. And one of our sort of guest assistant coaches was Clint Mathis, you know, and he played in that tournament and played very well. And I remember jawing with those guys and with my teammates saying, you know, Portugal is going to eviscerate the United States. You know, we're going to cruise through the group stage and we are a contender. I think we were, according to the bookies, third favorite. I think France was the favorite in that tournament and they crashed out in the group stage too. And by the way, there's a little bit of symmetry here because France has the most talented team they've probably ever had right now. The only other team that came close was that 2002 team, and they crashed out in the group stage. There's a lot of pressure on that French national team, and I think that bodes well for Portugal. But the point that I think I'm trying to get to is that there was a lot of expectation placed on that Portuguese national team, especially after the way they went out in 2000 against France, a dubious handball on Abel Xavier. Yes, I guess it's a handball, but you know, extra time with a golden goal in the extra time. I thought it was a harsh call. So I thought, man, we have everything to win this World Cup, and they were an utter disappointment. And so I don't want to get carried away with my expectations, especially when you look at this group of death. But you cannot look at this team and not think that they have everything you need to make a deep run and defend their title.
Absolutely, bud. I am looking forward to this tournament, and I'm so fortunate to have you along for the ride. As we announced, you know, on Twitter, in our last couple of episodes, but you are going to be with us all throughout Euro 2020. I can't thank you enough for your time with that and helping us out throughout this tournament. It's a huge favor to me that you're doing, and I greatly, greatly appreciate that, my friend.
Thanks, man. It's a pleasure. I don't get to talk about the national team that often. And since we are talking about the Portuguese national team, let me just add this to the podcast, that our Portuguese women's national team has only lost by a goal to nil here in the United States against a women's national team that is dripping with talent. So not only I just remembered you're recording that game. So apologies for saying that, but you know what?
You can hit stop now, Suzette. It's over.
But it's still worth watching because it was a really good performance. And, you know, I love seeing that because, you know, you have a show dedicated to the Seleção, and rightly so. There aren't many in the English language, and you've done a tremendous job of promoting our national team, worthy to promote as well, these women who didn't even have a program about a decade ago. And yet they come to the United States and they only get edged out by one goal. The future is bright in Portugal.
Yep, on the senior side, the women's side, the under 21 side, there is something going on, as the, you know, the old adage, there's something in the water in Portugal, and it's good that a lot of facets of this program, both senior, female, and the under 21s, the kids, as I like to call them, are getting their run and being able to be showcased here for the soccer world to see. Eric, my thanks to you, man. Great to have you on. Looking forward to getting you on throughout the tournament. The situation with Eric is this: we're gonna watch Hungary, and then we're going to break down Hungary, and then preview Germany all in one episode. Watch Germany, preview France, and then obviously we'll go ahead and review the semis, and then preview whoever we play in the final. Is that right, Eric?
You're the boss, so I'm going to say yes.
All right, my man. Thank you so much, and we will talk to you in a few days. And Forza, and let's go get them. Our thanks once again to Eric Krakauer of BN Sports for not only joining us here on episode number 45 of the Seleção podcast, but for being our Portugal match analyst throughout Euro 2020. Give Eric a huge follow on Twitter at Eric Krakauer. That's Eric Krakauer. Has been a huge supporter of this podcast ever since our inception a little over 3 years ago. And to have him on throughout the tournament is just a huge coup for us. And we greatly appreciate Eric's time and his support of the show. I didn't make a fist really, and I'm gonna go back and change my prediction here for what I think will be the starting 11 for the first match against Hungary. I had thrown in it was a joking way, but I wouldn't be mad at it if this happened. But I did have a starting 11 of Patricio Dias, Pep, Concelo, Rafael Guerreiro, William, Renato Sanches, Bruno Fernandes, Diogo Jota, Bernardo Silva, and Cristiano Ronaldo. That's who I had given Eric as my starting 11. I'm going to make a change, and I'm going to go a little predictable as if I was Fernando Sanches, and I'm going to go with Patricio in goal. I'm going to go with Cancelo on the right. I'm going to go with Rafael Guerreiro on the left, Dias and Pep in the middle. William is going to be my first of two defensive midfielders in my double pivot, and I'm going to have Danilo Pereira in as the other one to go along with Bruno Fernandes, Diogo Jota, Bernardo Silva, and Cristiano Ronaldo. I think as I mentioned, the quartet, along with service from Rafael Guerreiro and João Cancelo, I think it might be enough, especially in I don't want to go too big, too fast in terms of the offense, and that's why I'm a little hesitant to stick with my Renato Sanches decision in the midfield to go along with William. We saw that Ruben Neves started against Israel in the final friendly. When you don't hear a person's name during a match, it's not all bad. We heard a little bit more of William Carvalho, but if you're not hearing Ruben Neves' name, sometimes in the role that he's being asked to play, that's not all bad. I couldn't think of one mistake off the top of my head. Not a lot to contribute on the offensive side, but if he could be just a stabilizing force in the middle, he could be a good choice to be alongside William Carvalho. But I'm going to go with the old reliable double pivot of William and Danilo in my starting 11. We shall see in just a few days' time what the Seleção will look like in that first match against Hungary on June the 15th. Something I failed to follow up with Eric about when we were talking about the starting 11 and just rosters in general, especially for this tournament on the latter end of my next point here. I was going to ask him, like, do you build your starting 11 solely based on the best 11 that fits what you want to do on the field, or do you build it with the talent that you have and also factor in your opponent and their tendencies and their style of play when building that starting 11 for your match? So I'm interested to see what his philosophy is on that, and also interested to get his take on the five substitutions that will be available in this tournament. It's not the traditional three. Obviously, a truncated schedule the last 18 months or so, more like 15 months, but you know, the rosters have expanded to from 23 to 26, and substitutes from 3 to 5 because of the pandemic and all the matches that were trying to be fit in the last year or so. So me personally, I obviously think that that's going to definitely benefit nations like Portugal, like France, like England, Belgium, some others who are favorites in this tournament, because they are going to have the depth on their roster that the smaller nations just won't have. I'd like to get his thoughts on that on our next episode, an episode in which we hope we will be discussing a Portugal victory over Hungary to kick off our defense in Euro 2020. So that will do it for us on episode number 45 of the Selecion Podcast. Our thanks once again to Eric Krakauer for joining us, not only on this episode, but for being our Portugal match analyst throughout Euro 2020. Remember to bookmark our website, SelecionPod.com. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, enter the Selecion Podcast in the search engine, and hit that subscribe button. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at SelecionPod. Facebook.com/SelecionPod. Email the show, SelecionPod@gmail.com. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play, or any other podcasting platforms. Simply enter the Selecion Podcast in your search engine. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Selecion at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. And use the code Selecion. That's SELECAO. And follow the Joseph Ray Barbecue Company on Instagram at Joseph_Ray_BBQ_CO and message them to get your next event catered in the Northern California and Bay Area. I am Danny Pinto. I have been your host of episode number 45 of the Selecion Podcast, a proud partner of Portugal.net and a member of the Blue Wire Hustle Podcast Network. It is here. It is here. Euro 2020 is here. And there's only one thing I can say to celebrate this occasion, and that is this:
Forza Portugal!